Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. An official from the Society for the Propaganda of the Faith talks about World Mission Sunday with the theme this year, "As the Father has sent me, so I send you." A story of hope and survival from an area in Ethiopia's drought-devastated Burana region. Proclaiming the gospel to all people is the most precious service that the Church can render to humanity. This was the key point stressed by Pope Benedict XVI in his message for this year's World Mission Sunday, celebrated on October the 23rd. In his message, the Pope talked about how the gospel is not an exclusive possession of whoever has received it, but a gift commitment to be shared with all. The theme for this year's World Mission Sunday is "As the Father sent me, so I send you." Father Timothy Lehane is the Secretary General of the Society for the Propagation of the Faith. He spoke to my colleague Emma McCarthy about this year's theme and why supporting the Church's missionary activity is so vital.
This, as you say, is Mission Month. Originally in 1926, Pope Pius XI decided to have a Mission Sunday. So this year we're actually celebrating the 85th anniversary of World Mission Sunday. And the idea was that all the churches of the world would become aware of the whole church, of the mission of the whole church. So it's a sense of all the churches for the one church. And it was a Sunday originally set aside that people would pray for the missions, people would become aware of the missions, and then that people would help the missions economically. Over the past few years, there has been a sort of a tendency in many bishops' conferences, which is wonderful, to dedicate the whole month of October to the mission, as a mission month. And as you rightly stated, the Holy Father writes a message every year. And he writes a message for all the priests, all the religious, all the laity, and all the bishops of the different dioceses. And you asked me to explain a little bit what this year's message says. Well, when I talk about this year's message and put it into layman's terms, I'd like to go back to 1926, because Rerum Ecclesiae, which was the second big missionary document. The first missionary document was Maximum Illud by Pope Benedict XV, way back in 1919. And then in 1926, Pope Pius XI published Rerum Ecclesiae. And it's very interesting how there are one or two themes that the Pope mentioned in that at the time. He says the faithful must be brought to understood with zeal and constancy in prayer, and with what generosity they too must cooperate in the work of the holy and fruitful mission. And then the Holy Father, Benedict, in this year's message also said, the faithful must become involved in the universal mission, giving all, because it involves all, everything and always. The gospel, he said, is not exclusive good to one who has received it, but it is a gift to be shared. And indeed, the Holy Father talks about a gift commitment to be shared with others. So what the Holy Father is trying to say this year in the World Mission Sunday message, that you and I have been given a gift. And a gift, once you receive a gift, you get all excited and all happy about receiving a gift, and you want to go and tell others that you received a gift. If you receive something from your husband or from your wife or from your children or in the factory where you're working, of course you'll go and you'll say, "Oh, I got that." And you'll put it up on a wall or some stand and say, "I got that in a certain year from a certain person." What the Holy Father is basically saying to us, we should see our faith as a gift. but it's also a commitment, it's also a responsibility, because as baptized people, we are asked to go and proclaim, and that's the Holy Father's mission. Go and proclaim what you have heard and what you have seen, as he said, like the apostles on the road to Emmaus.
In today's globalized society, is mission superseded? Are we now concentrating too much on evangelization and not enough on mission?
No, I think mission, see, the context in today's globalized society, as you rightly say, the different contexts, the different socio-political elements in the world change. We can see North Africa at the moment, for example. What's happening in North Africa, the what they call this, the new Arab Spring of the last 12 months, that has changed totally the optic of our missionaries that are there in North Africa. If you take Europe at the moment, for example, where many people are leaving the church, actively leaving the church, and where other people are not going to church or not interested in church, or if you take Latin America, where there's a big Pentecostal movement at the moment of different evangelical groups coming in, or even in parts of Africa, the context is different. So there is a need for mission, and there is a need for us as Catholics and as Christians to proclaim why we are Christians. And again, if you take today's world as well, in many of our countries today, the Christian churches, not alone the Catholic churches, the Christian churches are being closed or being shut down. Because, according to the authorities, the local authorities, and this happens in many countries, they have no license to worship. They haven't been given license to worship. So our context, what is our context there in a society where Christians are being persecuted, where Christians are a minority group? I've recently come back from Kano in the north of Nigeria, and I was in one of the five chapels that were burnt down this year with the priests. And then that priest took me out to his new village. We passed through many Muslim towns, and then we came to a small little Christian village where he's building a new church. So we need to announce the joy of the resurrected Lord and the experience of that joy in our lives. Again, going back to the Holy Father's message, it's a little bit like, you know, the apostles on the road to Emmaus. They were sad. They felt deceived. What's this? And we thought he'd do this, and we thought he'd do that. And then all of a sudden, the stranger comes, the foreigner comes, and he begins to talk to them. And he begins to tell them about what Jesus said. And all of a sudden, they recognize him. Or it's a bit like the Samaritan woman in John 4. What does she do? She goes to the well, she looks for water, she talks to the stranger, in this case it's Jesus, and then she goes running back and she says, I've met a man who has told me wonderful things about myself and wonderful things about the water of life. And then she brings people to the man who is Jesus. And there's a beautiful part in the end of that gospel, somewhere around 4:40, and it says, you know, thank you very much. We don't need you anymore because we've seen him and we've heard him ourselves. And I think that's very important for us as Christians, to bring the message of life. As the Holy Father says, it's the most precious gift we can give to humanity in this Mission Sunday message. He talks about the fullness of life because he said so many people are searching in today's world, and the most precious gift we can give people is the fullness of life experienced by us through a resurrected Lord.
Very simply, you were speaking there in your last answer, as I was saying, you spoke there about your recent visit to Nigeria and to see the devastation in the wake of ethnic violence in Nigeria. And this is part of your job, isn't it? It's to help people.
Well, religious violence, more than ethnic, yeah.
Religious violence. This is part of your job, is to help people understand exactly what they're doing. It's their prayers, but also their money is a very active part of mission. Can you perhaps speak to us, just give us one example? You gave us example of Nigeria, but just give us another little example of a story of how their participation in Mission Sunday can change the reality for Christian communities in less fortunate parts of the world.
Well, there are many situations in the world today, and especially in Africa and Asia, where a local church is very vibrant because there are many people in it. For example, I can talk about a situation in Tanzania, where I was this year, where the local church is there. They're a very, very vibrant church, but they have no place to meet. They meet in a very, very dilapidated, broken down hall. And what they want is some sort of a structure where they can sit down and meet. And all they want are four walls and a roof. And they don't need any more. And they can't do it themselves. I mean, because they, financially, it's a very, very poor place. They are agricultural people. Or if you take, we'll say, the southern part of India, or the northern part of India, you have a lot of the Dalit groups, which are very, very poor people. These are people who want to get involved in their local Christian community. But again, as I said, they have no place to meet. So what we're doing is, in World Mission Sundays, we're offering these people an opportunity so that they can meet. And again, here's a thing. You know, if we look today, 40 years ago, when we spoke about missions, we spoke about Europeans going on the missions. And many Europeans went on the missions. But now we have the local churches who listened to the European missionaries, who have now want to give a commitment to their faith, as the Holy Father says here in his World Mission Sunday message, a gift commitment. And they to understand it's a gift. Or, for example, I was in Nigeria lately, and the church in the southern part of Nigeria is quite aware that it was a gift from the Irish missionaries that they have received, and now they want to commit themselves to give that gift back to somebody else.
Like Ireland?
Like Ireland. And, for example, they need formation. They need possibilities in order that they can actually form the local Christians and send the local Catholics out on mission. And they can't. I was with a bishop yesterday from the jungle in Peru, the Amazon jungle in Peru, and he has 10 priests from Europe going to work in his diocese. And he said, "Father, I can't afford to keep them, because in order to bring a priest from Europe, I too need money." And he said, "Where do I get it?" I was helping him to build a local chapel or a local house for priests. But I mean, he wants to give those priests a certain amount of subvention as well. Those priests need to live. Those priests need to get a vehicle, to get petrol for the vehicle. Those people need to get petrol for their canoe when they're going up the Amazon jungle. One bishop, for example, in Ecuador and South America, every time he goes out to a community, he has to take a plane, right? And he only goes out every few weeks, because every time he goes out in that plane, even though it's his own, it's a missionary plane, it costs $600. So, like, there's a lot of expense on mission today in poorer countries, especially amongst persecuted Christians, where they need financial support. So our Mission Sunday money then is distributed to these, and believe me, I could tell you 1,000 stories, because we have 6,000 projects that we accept every year out of 15,000. Dear Emer, I would love to be able to accept the 15,000 projects, because they're needy projects. This year I cut out projects because I hadn't sufficient money, and that's very, very sad.
Would you like to make one last appeal?
I would like to appeal to everybody who's listening at the moment to just consider for one moment one person or one community that they would like to help, and say, okay, I can help a certain community through World Mission Sunday.
That was Father Timothy Lehane, Secretary General of the Society for the Propagation of the Faith, speaking to Emma McCarthy. And Pope Benedict XVI's reiterated appeal for aid to the Horn of Africa, where millions are facing famine, drought and violence, once again highlights the need for the international community to continue its commitment to reach out to the suffering people. Today, I bring you a story from the eastern part of the Horn of Africa, where some 10 million people are facing devastating drought, and consequently, many are in the grips of famine. Very poor rains this year have led to crop failure, serious food and water shortages, and the death of hundreds of thousands of animals in Kenya, Ethiopia and South Sudan. Humanitarian agencies are warning that unless rains fall in October, the situation can only get worse. But today I am going to speak about hope, because as CAFOD's Pascal Palmer told me, drought doesn't have to become famine if the people are prepared and long-term programs are bearing their fruit. Yes, I spoke to Pascal, who is one of CAFOD's senior media officers, immediately after her return from the Borana region in the south of Ethiopia. There she met with CAFOD partners working to support communities to overcome the devastating impact of this year's drought. She told me that in Ethiopia, more than 300,000 cattle have died in the Burana region. People there have already lost up to half of their herds. If October rains don't come, more livestock will die, and then people will die. But now, I'm going to let Pascal tell the story.
I literally got off the plane just a day ago, and I've travelled from London over to Addis Ababa and then travelled by car the 12 hours down to the Burana region in the south. Now, Burana is the area being hit most severely by the drought that we've been watching footage about on the news, we've been reading about in the newspapers. And it's a very interesting situation in Burana. I went to meet the pastoralist communities, and the majority of people in the area are pastoralists, so that means that they rely on their livestock, their cows, their camels, their goats, their sheep. And of course, in the situation of a drought, those animals themselves, as well as the people, rely on water, and water is becoming more and more scarce. So some of the communities that I met told me about the fact that over the last 18 months, when they've already had two failed rains, so the last substantial rains were in March of 2010, that they have, all of them had the same story, that they had lost almost half of their herd, half of their livestock. And that, of course, means a huge impact on the way that they can live when they have to sell their cows at market, and the fact that they're having to buy grain with the money that they get from their cows, but they've got fewer and fewer cows. So they're really looking at a future that's full of worry and fear of what's going to happen if the drought worsens and they eventually lose even more livestock. Now, in the region of Burana, already, since the drought started, 300,000 livestock have lost their lives due to the drought. And even now, when you're going across through the bush, you can see that the land is terribly, terribly dry, that where there should be grass and grasslands, which should be a lovely green, light green colour, you just have the red earth around you. And the cattle that are making their way across these plains are moving very, very slowly. You can see their ribs, they're tired, their heads are down. And that's a significant sign that these animals aren't well, that they're weak and that they're vulnerable. So the people are experiencing a terrible time in Burana. The drought is incredibly severe.
But what's really interesting, Pascal explains, is that there isn't really a famine in Burana, in Ethiopia.
And that is a very significant point, that although these people really are looking down the barrel of continued and worsening drought, they are still managing somehow to cope. And Secretary General Ban Ki-moon from the UN last week actually spoke on this topic and said that in Kenya and in Ethiopia, what is amazing is that there are projects that are making people more resilient to the drought. And he specifically said that drought does not have to become famine. And what CAFOD's been doing with our partners in Burana is making sure that people who are facing an environment that is unlike what they're used to, where drought is happening upon drought and failed rain is happening upon failed rain, we're making sure that people have the knowledge and the skills to deal with this changing environment. We're making them more resilient. We're making them able to adapt to these changes. So some of the really hopeful things that I saw when I was there was the fact that we've been working really hard with partners on ensuring that water sources are cleared and made ready for rain, so that even when the smallest amount of rain falls, a rehabilitated watering hole has been fixed so that it can definitely hold that rain. And that means that the communities have one more water source nearer to their homes that they can go and drink from, that their animals can go and drink from as well.
That ensures, Pascal points out, that people aren't having to walk for 3, 4, 5 hours to get to the nearest watering hole.
And over the past 18 months in the projects that CAFOD's been working with on creating and repairing water holes making sure that people don't have to travel as far. We've been reopening old wells that have been silted up, that have been closed for 20 years. We've been talking to the community about locating these old wells that for some reason have become disused. We've actually ensured that 20,000 people now have access to water, and 80,000 animals now have access to water. And it's things like this that mean that a drought does not have to become a famine, because people are being helped to help themselves to be able to cope with this situation.
Cafard has also been helping people to look at alternatives for livelihood.
Because pastoralism is so dependent on the livestock, and there has to be an admittance that at the moment the increasing number of droughts and the increasing frequency of the droughts, most likely caused by climate change, the change in climate in that area, is something that people are going to have to adapt to. And one way is to supplement their income with other livelihoods. And I specifically went and had a look at a soap cooperative of 25 or more people who have been working together to make and then sell and market aloe vera soap, because aloe vera is very common in the area that I visited in Burana. And they're slowly, slowly building up their skills, accountancy, and the marketing of it, making sure that they actually work together as a cooperative that is successful. So all of these phenomenal projects that bring hope to the community and actually are still ensuring, as the drought potentially worsens, because there's another rain in October, that the expectation is that it will fail as well. But we're really making sure that these people are walking into that future that may be worse drought-wise, but actually they're going to have more tools to be able to cope with that drought.
Pascal, so you're actually saying that notwithstanding this current terrible emergency that the Horn of Africa is having to face, long-term projects are yielding their fruits, they're proving that they are successful.
Absolutely. And when I spoke to those experts on the ground who've been working with the communities in Burana year after year, that was their emphasis. The emphasis was that it is wonderful that people care and give, and CAFOD supporters themselves have given £4.5 million to the East Africa Appeal. Some of that money has been used to help these projects in Burana. But everybody said it's the long-term project that will help development and will also make sure that people are resilient. We need money in a crisis, of course we do, and that short-term, making sure everybody is okay and managing and coping and they have food and water, absolutely. But then we also have to think about the long-term to try and make sure that crisis doesn't happen again. And that's the aim of these longer-term resilience, or as we call them, disaster risk reduction projects that I've spoken about to do with water rehabilitation, etc. And they are the real key to making sure that these people in Burana do not have to keep facing the crisis situations of drought that can tip into famine.
I think it's very important to get this message out, because I was reading the other day an article talking about a kind of a donor fatigue that the West is experiencing, a feeling that, you know, whatever gets done, the situation that arises is always the same, is always so dramatic. But what you're saying is that donors can actually change the face of the tragedy.
Well, they already are. And just that comment by Ban Ki-moon, you can see he is seeing the evidence that these long-term projects in both Kenya and Ethiopia, and he's talking about our projects, CAFOD and our partners' projects in Ethiopia, are changing the way that people are coping with the drought situation. It is meaning that they can manage. It is still hard for them. We're not talking about the fact that they are fine. 300,000 cattle have been lost due to the drought. But people aren't dying. And that is the really, really important point. These people are incredibly strong, and they're used to dealing with drought. That has been part of their lifestyle and the environmental life cycle that they've dealt with for generation after generation. But what's being thrown at them right now is the fact that the drought cycles are much closer together and much more intense. So that skilling up and getting people the knowledge that they need to adapt quickly rather than over generations, is exactly what we're doing, and it's exactly what the money from donors is being able to do, and the proof is already there.
So while we're hearing of this mass exodus from Somalia, for example, into Kenya in search of refugee camps, this isn't happening to the people in Ethiopia, is it?
No, it's not. Actually, Ethiopia is coping on its borders with some of those people who are coming from their own lands where they're having terrible effects from the drought and crossing over borders in the hope that things are better in other countries.
Now, I see that coming up on the 7th is CAFOD's Harvest Fast Day, and there is an appeal for more donations. Would you like to say anything about that?
Thank you. On the back of what I was saying about the fact that helping the people of Borana isn't something that we can do in one crisis appeal, the development and the ability for them to adapt through these long-term projects, these water projects, these diversification of livelihoods projects, these long-term pieces of work need to be funded over long periods of time. So thank you to everybody who has given for the East Africa appeal. And what we're saying is that this drought isn't over. In fact, people are looking at the potential for failed rains in October. So this drought is only going to get worse. And in order to be able to help the people help themselves, we need to make sure that we can continue doing the good work. And so this Harvest Fast Day, we're calling out for you to continue giving to the East Africa Appeal. And you can go to our website, CAFOD's website, on cafod.org.uk and click on the relevant place. And thank you very much in advance.
Pascal, just one final question, a personal one, if you like. What does it feel like to be back in a place like London after having experienced Africa in such a dramatic situation?
It's very interesting to go from a country like Ethiopia to the UK and walk out of the aeroplane into Heathrow. I think during this trip, what I learned was some of the things that are wrong with our own consumerist society. Because I sat down with some elders who were looking after the rehabilitation of a big well called Webb Ella, and they were good enough to let us interview them for a couple of hours in the baking sunshine. And I was rushing around, not only asking questions, but taking photographs and taking film footage. And they were patient and they were good. And do you know what they said at the end of the 2 hours? Thank you for the time that you have given us. And we are so ashamed and we are so sorry that we could not offer you a meal. Because in the way that we would traditionally look after guests who have come to speak to us, we would feed you well and you would feast with us, but we do not have any food. And I think that taught me everything that I needed to know, that people in Ethiopia could still be thinking about the fact that they were missing being able to be polite to us, even though they're in the middle of a drought. And it's made me come back to London and think about our own ways of giving and our own ways of sharing, because these people are helping each other out even when they have nothing. They're sharing, they're making sure that nobody falls at the wayside, and that's a phenomenal thing to see.
That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.